Sam. How are you doing?
Hello, Alistair. I'm doing so, so well. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, thank you. It's a lovely sunny spell we're having at the minute, right in time for both Radical Optimism and Season 1 of Doctor Who. Coincidence? I don't think so.
Literally, I don't believe coincidence exists, and I don't know how the BBC or Disney pulled it off, but the Aurora Borealis in the UK, great marketing.
Great marketing. Aurora Borealis at this time of year, at this time of day, in this part of the country, localized entirely within the Doctor Who season.
Oh my
God. Yes.
We're having smoked ham.
We're aware as well, we might have some new friends of the pod this week, which is very exciting, because when we talk about the live episodes, we do see that we have some new friends of the pod who come along with us, which is always very nice.
Yeah, exactly. So we are Hoolala Doctor Who Podcast. We're fun, fruity, and we always give a little queer twist.
Yes, we discuss and love all eras of Doctor Who. We do our best to dive backwards and forwards as much as we can, keep it fresh. Particularly, we're loving on those from our childhood, discussing all of our honest highs and lows, but with generally quite a positive spin. We managed to find a good giggle, at least. If that sounds like something you're into, do follow the podcast. Check us out on our socials at Hoolala Pod and come along with us for the ride.
Yes, we would love to have you along for the ride. And we are so excited because we are now diving into live Doctor Who. Are you excited, Alistair?
I'm excited and overwhelmed. I'm less overwhelmed than I was for the 60th. When the 60th came around and we were like, this content machine keeps on whirring,
the content
man.
Farm keeps chugging.
It really freaked us out because we'd been off air for a year and we were like, oh my God, what do? We can't keep up. But I'm feeling so much more calm coming into this era. I'm just taking it as it comes. I'm having a lovely time. Just enjoying this lovely rush of being in a whole new full series of Doctor Who. And it feeling like truly a brand new era that is, I think, standout from anything that's gone before it. It feels genuinely very fresh, I think, and very different to anything we've done before. So I'm kind of just also experiencing it as almost like a new show.
Yeah, very much that. We grew up loving Doctor Who. We love all the eras of Doctor Who. And this really does feel like it's regenerated into almost a new show. It feels like a reintroduction to the character, which it is, because it's on a whole new platform. A load of new people are being exposed to it. But there's just so much exciting stuff to see. And we're kicking off strong.
Kicking off very strong. Someone at The Guardian summarized these two episodes. They said it was a double bill of what if Doctor Who did Alien, but it had incredibly cute babies in it. And what if Doctor Who did the swinging 60s, but nobody was swinging?
You, dear listener, will be swinging between two episodes of Hoolala this week, because not only is it a double premiere for Doctor Who, it's a double premiere for Hoolala!
Oh my God, they're getting double the Hoolala.
Double the Hoolala. Now, we're trying to keep up with the BBC and Disney as best we can. And as you all know, we got two new episodes of Doctor Who this week. We had Space Babies and The Devil's Chord. So not only will you be getting your regular Thursday scheduling this week, you'll be getting two episodes on the same day.
Two episodes on the same day. Can you believe that? Can you believe how hard we work for you? And for free.
And for free. But listen, they won't be dropped at midnight. They will be dropped nearer to midday. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your patience. Thank you so much. Thanks so much. So, what we normally do on these episodes, if you're new to Hoolala, is we run through some context for the episode. We recap the story. We hear your thoughts, which you've been sharing with us at Hoolala Pod. And we've gathered lots of your thoughts this week. We talk about our highs and lows for the episode. Fun facts you might not know. And there's a little game we play at the end. You'll discover more about that when we get there.
Exactly. It's a fun little game we do love to play. But when we were looking through the tweets that you guys have sent us for this week, Alistair found a really, really funny one. Do you want to let them know which one you found?
Oh my God, this one from Hamish, friend of the pod. It was like, me does nothing but criticize Doctor Who. Me, whenever someone criticizes Doctor Who, and then it's the Protect Queer Art screen grab.
From Drag Race. It's so funny. That's what Doctor Who has always been, and that's what it really is now.
It's queer art.
It's queer art. Well, listen, as we said, we're doing a double bill of Hoolala this week. So once you've listened to this episode all the way through, giving it a like, a share, and put it on your story, you can then listen to our thoughts on The Devil's Chord. But right now, we're diving into our thoughts for the first episode of Season 1, Space Babies.
Yeah, get a cup of tea, get a Kit Kat, settle in, because you're here for 2 hours.
Exactly. Now, it has been less than 48 hours as of time of recording that this episode's been out. I've watched this episode twice. I've watched Devil Chord 3 times.
Yeah.
How many times have you seen them?
I've seen each of them twice. Space Babies I've seen 2.5 times, because I also restarted. And I've had a good skim of the transcript for this one again, write up our episode summary today. So I think that sort of counts as four legally.
Legally. It's pretty binding that that's four. I think you're beating me on that front. Yeah. A little context to this episode. So this, as I mentioned, is season one, episode one of the new series of Doctor Who. It came out just a few days ago on the 11th of May, 2024. It has an overnight viewing of 2.6 million, according to the Radio Times. But a very important fact for this is that that doesn't include the iPlayer views at midnight, which, as we all know, will be a big, big factor into the viewing numbers for the new series. Currently, as of time of recording, it has an IMDb score of 6 out of 10.
That's absolutely right. Sam's absolutely right. I do think streaming's going to be quite a big one. Obviously, they're going for kind of a streaming-first approach for Doctor Who now, as in quite literally the episodes drop on iPlayer 19 hours now before they appear on TV, which is certainly an approach. I'm not sure if I would do the midnight screening again. I think it was really fun for the first two, and it was nice having a little drink building towards that, having a little espresso martini. When I tweeted that from Hoola La, I wasn't kidding. I was there with a little espresso martini because I was like, I need to be awake for this. And I was then just bouncing off the walls at 2 a.m. But I don't know if I'd do it again. I might become a Saturday morning viewer. I don't know about you.
No, I can see us being a Saturday morning viewer. I think for the first one, I had to do it at midnight because, you know, it's the first one.
You had to.
I just tend to be awake anyway at midnight. But also, I think I was so tired from having stayed up for it. And I think because it was double bill as well, you know, we were going to bed pretty late and I had quite a few drinks while watching. And then we watched again with friends the next day. So I can see myself becoming a Saturday morning viewer. Yeah. And that, like, I do that with Drag Race and stuff. When other things that come out in the middle of the night, I don't stay up for it. But Doctor Who's always a bit different.
We're going to dive into the recap. Sam, shall I kick us off?
Yes, kick us off, Alistair.
Okay, it's Christmas Eve again. Having defeated the Goblin King on Christmas Eve and restored Ruby's timeline, the Doctor's new companion steps aboard the TARDIS.
A curious Ruby asks about the Doctor, learning where he's from, how old he is, and why the TARDIS looks like it does. It's not long before the Doctor suggests a random trip, taking Ruby back millions of years to see dinosaurs on land that one day become North America.
After stepping on a butterfly, Ruby briefly becomes Rubathon Blue of the 57th Hemisphere Hatchlings, which is quickly fixed when the Doctor breathes life back into the butterfly and sets it free. Now it's time to go forward. Ruby picks five numbers, and the two head for a space station in the year 21506. Aboard the station, something is very wrong, and they discover a mysterious bogeyman underneath a baby farmer run by talking babies. Space babies!
Mistaking Ruby and the Doctor for Mummy and Daddy, the babies explain that they're taking control of the ship, each running tasks under the watchful eye of Nanny, a computer system that blows their noses and wipes their nappies. The Doctor talks to Nanny, warning her that there's buildup of pressure in Hull 3B and that something is ramping up where the bogeyman lives. And if that continues, baby boom! Nanny tells the Doctor to find her in Portal 357.
On the way, the Doctor and Ruby discuss the insane coincidence that surrounds them, musing that if things connect, then you are connecting like crazy. Suddenly, the Doctor sees himself back at the church on Ruby Road on the day of her birth. But this time, the memory changes. Instead of walking away, Ruby's mother turns and points to him. The Doctor is back on the ship, but now it's snowing in the corridor. He tells Ruby that he's never seen anything like this before. It's as if a memory just came through.
Ooh, but before they can dwell any further, they meet Nanny, who is actually called Jocelyn, the on-site accountant left behind when the space station was closed. 6 years ago, the government closed the baby station to save money, but the law says it's illegal to stop the birth machine.
The Doctor helps recalibrate the system controls with the Sonic, which starts to repair the ship. The babies are refugees, and there's a planet nearby, Mondo Karoon, that can take them in. The only problem? The space station is fixed in orbit, and the bogeyman is blocking the way to the TARDIS.
Ruby realises they've got babies, a nanny, and a literal monster living down below, just like a children's story. The three spot Eric, one of the babies, heading to fight the bogeyman on Ruby's advice to be brave. The Doctor and Ruby rescue Eric, and the remaining clever space babies manage to scare off the bogeyman with a flamethrower.
The Doctor uses a pathogenesis machine to discover that the monster is made of snot. The baby's snot. The machine's educational software ran out of control. The babies need stories, so it designed and birthed a literal monster.
The two are chased by the bogeyman, and on Jocelyn's instructions, lead it into an airlock where it gets trapped. To the Doctor's horror, he realises that Jocelyn plans to suck it out into space. He begs Jocelyn not to, explaining that the monster is one of the babies. Feeling empathy for the monster, who's the only one of its kind, he throws himself into the airlock to manually seal the doors and save the bogeyman.
Later, Nanny apologises to the babies for being very naughty, and the Doctor provides a neat solution to send them all to Mondo Karoon. The pressure in Hull 3B is their nappies, and by letting a zillion metric tons of methane rip, blast them off towards safety.
Oh, he really does that. After an extra special nuts day, the Doctor gives Ruby her own TARDIS key, but explains there's only one place he can never, ever take her, to that church on Ruby Road that Christmas, the day she was born. Ruby says that actually, they can see her mum on Christmas. And with that, the TARDIS crashes back in Ruby's flat, destroying the ceiling all over again.
Ruby runs out of the TARDIS to greet her family, but the Doctor lingers behind, starting a scan of Ruby and her DNA on the screens. As he steps out of the door, it begins to snow inside the TARDIS.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Interesting.
I think, you know what? The more I watch this one, the more I like it. And the more as well that I've actually gone through the plot. I'm like, yeah, good fun.
It's good fun. Well, look, we'll jump into our thoughts in a moment. Before we do, here is what some of you, dear listeners, had to say about Space Babies.
Yes.
Evan Jones said, light, wholesome fun. This feels like RTD showing why Doctor Who is a very different vibe from other sci-fi shows on streaming platforms right out the gate. Also, we stan baby Eric fighting the good fight with his foam sword.
Oh, Eric. The babies were all actually adorable. Poppy, I think, was
Poppy!
Captain Poppy!
I loved her.
The faces Captain Poppy made. Like, I honestly wish Captain Poppy a really good day. Laura said, I think it wasn't the strongest opener storyline-wise, but loved Shooty and Millie so much. I think if you take the episode as being about their relationship more than the plot, then it works better. Also, as good as Golda Rocheville was, she could have been used way more.
I think I agree with that. Make me an offer. Plain easy tweet. 10 out of 10. That's all they said. 10 out of 10.
Easy review. Ethan, friend of the pod, said, it was fun, but a little too fast for pacing. Shooty and Millie were everything I thought, and I love how they're building on the arc.
William at Bean said, fun, just so much fun. Exactly what I expected of it. I think I prefer The Devil's Chord, though.
Oh, well, darling, we'll get to that one next. Don't skip ahead.
Don't skip ahead.
Almost myself at updates_who said, funniest episode yet, has some sad moments. Performances from the three adults were great. Bogeyman was super creepy. Talking CGI babies? No.
Zimmerick at Zimmerick Art said, I've seen people say they either hated it or loved it, and I'm amongst the crowd that loved it. The babies were so cute, and I loved the interactions between Ruby and 15 in them. Foundlings finding foundlings was a perfect way to go full circle with their relationship.
Callum said, I thought the tone Boogeyman was overused and generic and lazy until I realised it was clever, accurate and correct.
I did, because I only ever really hear American people call, and they call it the Boogeyman.
The Boogeyman,
because they have boogers. Yeah. But yeah, I wondered that too when I was watching. I was like, they're saying Boogeyman an awful lot. And then at the end, I was like, no.
Yes.
Well, listen, we've gone through your thoughts. Do you want to hear ours now?
Go on. Let's say some. I've got so many stacked up, so many things I want to say. Okay. What do you want? A high, low, or mixed point? I've got hundreds.
Starting chronologically, I just want to quickly say, love the new redesign for the titles. Love that they changed the Doctor Who logo .png. They fixed it, and I'm so glad they did.
I know. I was there kind of on the sofa at midnight. Poor boyfriend, he suffers, but he'll watch along with me. And I was like, they changed it. And he's like, change what? Change the titles. It's 3D now. And there's like, oh, was that a problem before? Yes. So anyway, nice to hear they saw the feedback.
I know. It's nice that they saw it. They adapted it. They even like changed some of the actual animation for it. Like the bit where the TARDIS sort of flies from one side screen to the other. It's a lot further back. There's some like meteors flying around. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, I really like that. You kind of follow the TARDIS into the vortex and it, I don't know, it's kind of a cool shot. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's really, really fun. So I'm glad. It's nice to hear that they are listening to the fans. I'm not a big fan of when shows generally, and I think American Horror Story sometimes suffer from this, like they listen to the fans as they go and they're very clear. Well, they didn't like that, so we're not going to do that, or we're going to change this. But little things like that, I think that's smart to adapt and change.
I would say broadly, the VFX in the story was really, really good. I think with the exception, perhaps, of saying the baby's mouths, which is maybe not like, I think, a failing on the part of the people doing the effects, but just a very difficult effect to make not look weird. Because a baby's mouth is not designed to articulate words properly yet. And so it's always going to look weird when you kind of, I think, channel like, I don't know, a 6 to 10-year-old's voice through a baby is not going to ever look like it syncs up quite right, no matter what you do. But I think very broadly, like, the effects in this look fantastic. Like, the scene with the dinosaurs, absolutely right that they put that in all the trailers. My standout for me I mean, I get chills like just seeing the TARDIS fly, and like with the score that we're getting underneath it at the minute as well, which is a whole separate point. But seeing the TARDIS fly out of the vortex and through space, I was like, yes, like that fed my soul in such an important way. And then when it approaches the space station in one of the very early scenes and kind of goes through the walls and then does that really nice crash in, and that kind of that it does lately, I love that kind of landing that they're doing, these really like aggressive TARDIS landings where it just kind of thuds into the scene. I think it looks so fantastic. It just gives me like, ooh, pleasant chills everywhere.
Me too. The animation, like when I compare, I find it difficult not to compare this to The End of the World and other stories like that. But that, again, that's another point. I'll come back to that. But thinking about like the animation of like Platform One compared to the animation for the baby station, it's so cinematic. I can really imagine seeing this on like a cinema screen. Exactly agree with you. The scene with the TARDIS is like spinning, flying towards it out of the vortex. It's just gorgeous. I love the color palette they've chosen of the like purples and oranges and pinks of the vortex this time around. I just think it's so impressive. I do hope we do still get a few like landings.
Classic landing.
The classic like TARDIS landings. But I do love these like big thuddy like doofs into
the. I just love the movement. I love it.
And Ruby said something I don't really think about as a viewer, certainly, because I've never traveled in a TARDIS myself. But for a newbie to the game, she was like, oh, we've gone through walls. Because when she came in, they were outside. And when she came out in the dinosaurs, they were outside. And that must be really weird to be like, wait, we're indoors now. How did we get through the walls?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so she's thinking it's nice that they get into how she would think about the TARDIS moving a bit. It's like, wait, but we're inside.
I just love seeing a new companion deal with being a new companion, having like learn all this on the go and figure it out. And like they really do remind us as the audience what we've gotten used to after all these years, this isn't normal. People don't People react to this kind of stuff.
And I think that's another nice thing to say. I think they did a really good job with making this a jumping on with their explainers for newbies. It didn't bother me at all as an existing fan, like going back over kind of existing territory, because we kind of need to do it with every companion who comes on anyway. But and it's nice that we now have a really, really clear jumping on point. It's either this episode or it's the Christmas special or it's the 60th specials. Okay,
well, I mean, the only thing I would say with that is that to me, I know this is season one, episode one, this really is episode two. Like the Church and Ruby Road really is episode
one. Right.
And they do quite a lot of referring to, I think they're going to be leaning on the who dropped Ruby off storyline, the why was she abandoned. And I think that the one sad thing I find for brand new fans, I mean, it's not hard to go on Disney Plus and find the Church and Ruby Road, watch that. But the fact that this is an episode two, you know what I mean? I kind of wish it was just in a list like that and not listed as like, it's a special, like a special feels it should be a standalone thing.
I think when you go to season one, it shows the Church on Ruby Road first, then episode one. So it kind of nudges you towards that.
That's
and
good.
I imagine it looks like that on Disney, though Disney, I can't remember if they called it special
no,
four Dis- or something.
When we were abroad earlier in the year, I had to look on Disney Plus and they're listed as individual credits. Like you couldn't even watch all three of the specials, like as a series, it was like different titles, special one, special two, special three, and they called it special four. So my concern, and this is just the panicky thing, is that as a new viewer, because I agree with you, I think that this is a very good jumping on point that really softly explains the stuff you need to know quite quickly. They're like, okay, so I have to watch special four before I can watch episode one, which is really episode two after special four, but then special four comes after specials one, two, three, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice, I guess, and what I meant to say is that you can call a clean break with up until the end of series 13, Power of the Doctor, you can disregard Power of the Doctor back now and you can jump on.
Not that you should. Not that you should.
But if a new fan wanted to, that all now is a bit like it joins the back catalogue.
Yes.
It's a clean new start.
Which is very clearly what they've been doing with, even with iPlayer, where they have, you know, Doctor Who Classic, Doctor Who 2005 to 2022, and then Doctor Who. But I will say, it makes it tricky to find Doctor Who sometimes, because you're looking for
very
it.
Very hard.
There's about
to find
six
Doctor
different
Who.
Titles that say Doctor Who.
I know. It really should sit under one Doctor Who umbrella on there, and then have some options for navigating what you want to see. But I don't know if iPlayer can facilitate that.
Do select
that,
audio
but...
navigation. Press enter now. Did you notice the Mavity shout out on the screen?
Oh, did it say that as well?
Yeah, when it was all in English and she was like, oh, it's English, they speak English, there was something talking about like the Mavity. So they keep on keeping on.
I think it's fun. I like Mavity a lot. I thought it was a good explainer for the newbies. It's nice to like, you know, cover. And as well, you know, like the exposition we go through quite quickly with, like we said, going through the age, where I'm from, Gallifrey is definitively gone. there was a genocide. I think that's the first time they've called kind of the Chibnall era destruction as well a genocide, which it was. Well, it was a genocide both times in the Time War and in Chibnall's era. So I guess they're just using that, you know, to explain both.
I like, and I mean, well, I don't know how much they'll go onto it as the series continues, but they definitely got messy in Doctor Who canon where Gallifrey was destroyed in the Time War, then they undid that, then the mask came and then he killed them all again, but then was that real and was that a trick? Da, 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 da. I like that they're just plainly calling it a genocide and they're saying it was horrible, it was a massacre or whatever, but they're not leaning too much into, well, there was a war and we did this, or I have a friend and the friend is called the Marge. Like, we as the audience, we already know what happened, but for a new viewer, you don't really need to know. You just get told, okay, there's this. Yeah. I do think that they're clearly catering this towards a new audience, and I think a young audience as well, which I'm glad is what they're doing, because that's how a show continues and stays fresh. But I do think when you compare that scene to like the Ninth Doctor scene where he's like, there was a war and we lost, and you can see he's like harrowed by it. And then, I mean, I guess that 15's gone through therapy, but he's like, gone! They're gone, Ruby!
Delivery in itself became a bit of a meme because cropped and taken out of context, it gave something of an implication of a sort of delight that the Time Lords were no more. And it's like, dealt with. Time Lords, gone. Thank goodness. But no, I mean, actually, I think the way that they were playing it, and they do come onto this as well later, is that the only reason I can smile and put a grin on it is because I've experienced so much loss and come to terms with it. And that's how I'm able to sort of smile about this, because I'm so happy and so grateful to be alive. And I think that's a really interesting way of playing it as well. And, you know, a big part of like the 14th Doctor's ending story in The Giggle is that the Doctor kind of finally slows down and stops and kind of at least briefly retires and comes to terms with a lot of the terrible things that have happened. And in that time, I suppose this is one of the things that they process and come to terms with. So there's not that recency anymore. So there's not that kind of rage and regret. It's kind of like an acceptance of what's happened.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change it. What I can do is that I'm here, I'm alive, I'm free, I can do what I want. And the other part I think that's really interesting is them being very deliberate as well about the term genocide. So this story as well would have been written, more than a year ago as well. And I think their intention with that as well was to draw a parallel for Shuti Gatwa to pull on, because there's a symmetry with his real life story, because Shuti Gatwa was born in Rwanda and he came to Scotland as a child when his family fled genocide and civil war in 1994. And so there's a link for Shuti as well as an actor there, I think, to talk about and to lean on and to sort of draw something from as well. So I think that's quite powerful in the way that he can deliver that now. And there's obviously then the symmetry as well with the way that lines up with world events now. And so I think it felt relevant, and especially with what was happening, I think, with the Eurovision boycott and with it being on TV on the same night, I think there was a bit of a whoa. Like, you know, the timing, I think, of that being brought up.
Yeah, it's really interesting because obviously they wrote and filmed this months and years ago, and there's no way they could have known that what was going on now with Eurovision, that would have anything to do with the air date for this. And I really like that now there is more diversity within the casting for Doctor Who. They are leaning into the story behind those actors. I think this is one of the most important reasons why we need to have diversity on screen, both in race and gender and sexuality and all those, because those people can bring to their performances, and hopefully in the writer's room as well, I hope, their personal experiences into these stories, and people will be able to connect with these. And I think that we couldn't have done this with any other Doctor. It had to be Shuti Gatwa's incredible 15th Doctor. And I think we're so lucky to be in this new era where they are more willing than ever. Doctor Who's always pushed the boat and been an advocate for people who are different and underrepresented voices. And I think we're so lucky to have Shuti Gatwa at the helm of this show. Bloody lucky.
Yeah, bloody lucky. I mean, I want to say that as well about his performance, but I agree so much with what you're saying as well. I think him being in the role allows him to add so much depth. He's the first black man to play the Doctor. He's the first openly queer man to play the Doctor. And he's the first person born outside the UK to play the Doctor. And the performance, honey.
And the
he
performance.
Has range.
Yes, well, let's go on to the performance. I've got here the Doctor and Ruby's relationship. Let's talk about the performance of the Doctor. Let's talk about Ruby, and let's talk about those siblings.
I think, oh my God, they are such siblings, aren't they? There's that to it as well. Like, I think this is, I mean, on Shuti's particularly, I think he's got so much range, and he just feels so comfortable in the role so quickly. And for me, it's often taken a Doctor sometimes, not always, like maybe a series or two to really get into their groove and for like their best episodes to come up. And a lot of actors, I think, really settle into and find their Doctor a little bit later, but it feels like so early, he's so sure like what kind of Doctor he's playing. And it feels like, you know, I can feel the way that he talks to even the babies when he was like doing that bit about like no one grows up wrong and explaining that to the Captain Poppy. I was like, oh, and people were tweeting about that and saying like, that gave me chills. And it's like, it was delivered so beautifully. And then on the chemistry, I think with Shuti and Millie Gibson, they have, I mean, such like bestie energy is absolutely there. Like, they, I think, talked about themselves being like the two school kids who'd always get in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, like just being naughty and going off on silly adventures and sort of bunking off. And they also do have massive sibling energy. Mm-hmm. And just like, he's a bit like protective older brother. It's like when they are running away from the boogeyman and they're doing their screaming, they both look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Doing the kind of instinctive, like, go down the corridor. No one looks sensible or dignified. They both look ridiculous, kind of running away on the CCTV. And then when they get into the lift, really made me laugh when they're both there and he's like covering up her eyes and he's just got his hand over her face and they're both like,
I love when she tries to put it down. He goes like, oh yeah, okay. Like, he kind of forgot that it was there.
Yeah. What did you think?
I love it so much. I love both their performances. Yeah. I think that Millie, when they announced her casting, I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And I'm not sure how I feel because she's so young. I don't know how connected she is to Doctor Who. Well, not that you need to be in the role, but I was like, oh, I'm so curious. I didn't know her work prior to that. And I was like, I'm just curious to see what she brings to the role. I, from The Church and Ruby Road, but especially solidified in this episode, have fallen in love with Ruby Sunday. I think that she has such incredible chemistry with the Doctor. She seems like the kind of companion that's so willing to like hold him to his own, like sort of keep up with him, tell him when he's like, I can imagine her saying to him like, well, don't be a dick, Doctor. She ever thought he was out of line or something. I love that he always says to her, but also to like the villains, like, no babes. There's one line in this, what's the line where he's like, it's something like, yeah babes, like he does like a funny little, I can't imagine
there was an exchange of babes back and forth and I can't remember who said it.
Yeah.
But someone said babes and then he got babes back
and it reminded me of when he was talking to his younger self in the special. He's like, you played the game, you get a prize, honey.
I love that,
it's so funny.
I love it so much. I agree, there was a bit where they decide to go after the boogeyman and it's actually like it's Ruby who goes first and she gets the pipe and she starts smacking the walls. She's like, boogeyman. There's a bit where the Doctor's like, right, got to do this bit by myself now. Back to the ship. It's not safe. And she's like, are you telling me to go home? Are you telling me to like stand and wait and let you do it on your own? I'm like, Doctor, absolutely not.
But it's just so funny. I think I can't remember exactly what she said. It's something like, oh, so you asked me to stay behind? Ha, okay.
Yes, exactly.
And then she walks off a bit and then she turns around and she goes, well, come on then, like to the Doctor.
Yes.
That's it. It's
she's
so
got
funny.
So much charm. She's so charming. I love her. The chemistry really comes through as well. And like all the interviews they do, you can tell they really just click as actors. So it's just such magnificent casting that it works.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that they really bounce off each other well. And I'm so excited to keep talking about this when we get into The Devil's Court as well, because there's so many great scenes in both of these episodes where they just bounce off each other and they, you can tell like within character and off screen, they're like making each other laugh. I'm really excited to see more from both of them. And I think we're going to get it with episodes like 73 Yards, more emotional and dark and upsetting. Because like you said, the scene with Captain Poppy when the Doctor was saying about mummy and daddy going and she's like, oh, did we grow up wrong? And that little speech he gives about like no one grows up wrong. It is so emotionally connecting. And like, the bit when he like gives her a hug and then they're like, oh my goodness. And then he says, when was the last time you were hugged? And Poppy goes, never.
Never.
I was like on the brink. I turned around to Nick who was watching and he was like welling up. He was like, oh my God.
Never.
I
know. Let's talk about babies.
Let's talk
the baby
babies.
Theme.
Let's talk babies.
First of all, let me say, hi, Daddy. Hello, Daddy. That made me laugh. Like the second he enters like the ship, the first alien, okay, apart from goblins, the first kind of alien adventure he does off world, the first thing they say to him, hello, Daddy. Hi, Daddy.
Hi, Daddy.
Really, really funny to me.
Yeah.
I felt, well, I mean, first of all, really, really ambitious to say, okay, episode one, season one, got to be a showstopper. What are we going to do? Talking babies. It's like one of the hardest things to do in television, famously, is work with children, let alone like 12 infants and not have them all crying, pooping, tantrums. They are babies and try and get them to react correctly and then animate their mouths and everything else. Just on theming, though, the baby theme really works for me. So obviously it's a really goofy premise, space babies. And also, I'll come back to this. I don't feel too goofy for a season opener. RTD season openers are goofy. Mm. But obviously, it's a great framework as well for like the themes that we're going to explore in this season. We have the Ruby. We have the Doctor and Ruby, who are both abandoned orphans. And it's a rework, obviously, of the Timeless Child storyline that's coming together now, and they're adding a lot more depth to that story. They're not
Russell
kind of trying
really
to bury
feels
that.
Like he got a gift with that. Like Russell was taking that.
He really does.
We all thought he was going to erase it, and he said, "Oh, absolutely not.
Absolutely not." We honestly thought that was going to be packaged and shut down, and no, like you know, so it absolutely makes sense, right? That the first adventure together would be to a station full of abandoned children. We've gone from baby to baby, and they acknowledge that as well, kind of in story. That like, wow, if things are connected. This is really connected.
Yeah.
And with the babies as well, you know, there was some, I think, heavy-handed political commentary. Again, I'll come back to. I think he knows what he wants to say, but doesn't quite know how to say it in a way that is kind of subtle. He's quite overt with like, this is the point I'm trying to make. But the babies themselves, I felt were really very sweet. They weren't themselves the butt of the joke. There was a lot of empathy extended to the babies.
Yeah.
And it was quite an endearing story about kind of a younger generation that's being betrayed by their elders.
No, that's so true. I really like the idea of exploring the idea of a baby farm for outstanding colonies, because it's something that I think we've all thought about with other sci-fi, like how do you populate these new worlds and stuff? And it comes off the back of other stories, like I'm thinking the Doctor's Daughter and things like that, about, you know, force growing clones and things like that. So it's an interesting thing to explore. The babies themselves are so cute. I again, it's silly and goofy. The first time I watched it, I was like, oh, I don't really know how I feel about this. But we said about on the pod before that, like, I don't necessarily know that if it's that I'm cringing because I don't think I'll like it. I think it's that I'm worrying, like, oh, what will people that aren't Doctor Who fans think about the? I'm like, what will my mum think about this? Like, is she going to like, I want her to like it. And you just have to kind of let that go. And if these two episodes is both just silly and fun. With the VFX for the babies, when I first watched it, I was like, oh my God, this is so Uncanny Valley. I really don't know if I like this. But what actually made me appreciate it a lot more is watching The Unleashed. And if you haven't watched The Unleashed for this episode, I'd say you should go watch it. It's really worth a watch. But seeing how much thought went into it, because I kind of was like, oh, it's that noughties thing where you want to make like animal faces, you know, where they make animals talk in like the noughties in movies. It kind of reminded me of that. But then you see about how they made the VFX track models for the actors who were performing the lines, and then the VFX track models for the babies. Whenever the babies spoke, their entire face was CGI. It wasn't just the mouth. People thought they just swapped out the mouth. They actually had to animate the entire face because they were saying about, you know,
oh,
the
really?
Cheeks
wow.
and the eyebrows and stuff. If anything, my critique would have been, I think they should have pushed it further. And they talk in Unleashed, they say, we didn't want to push it too far. We wanted to make sure it seemed like these babies were talking. My issue isn't with the mouth. It's that, like, the eyebrows never move, because they wouldn't on a baby. Like, when a baby sat there, the eyebrows wouldn't move, and they kind of kept that. But I would have, I mean, listen, I don't know how to animate an eyebrow, so who am I to talk? But that's the one thing I think that was uncanny for me, is it felt that the lower half of the face, even though it was a conscious thing they were trying to avoid, still did feel quite disconnected from the top half.
Because you could see which bit was animated.
Well, it was all animated, that's the thing, but I think they decided
As in it stood out that the mouth was the most...
100%, yeah, the mouth was the thing that was most worked. Bit. And you could tell that it wasn't necessarily mad. But like you said, it's kind of an impossible task because babies don't talk. So you've got to suspend your disbelief. And I think what they did do was incredible. Like, the amount of work that went into it was amazing.
The workaround I would personally have pitched in the room would have been a bit like kind of Doug. Is it Doug the dog in Up? I would have given them all little translators in their prams. And the way I would have made it funny would have been to have elderly voices voice all the babies. So they all have like slightly dodgy translators. And you could have had like Ian McKellen as one baby. I would have done Judy Dench as another baby and so on. And I would have given them like all these like, you know, A-list actors like as babies. I think would have been really funny. So be like, when were you last hugged? And then like Ian McKellen voice, never. And then just, I think would have just
been
like...
Oh, that would have been so good.
I think that would have been really funny, or just like, you know, just slightly incongruous voices coming out of these babies' translators. And I just, or you could have had some real humor, just like...
Danny Dyer.
And you know, just like, I love you, Ruby. And just like that coming out of like... would have been really funny. That's how I would have approached that problem. Yeah. And I think would have just been like... instant campery silliness.
Yeah,
I just think they should have done that. I think that's just funny.
There's an interesting, well, I'll get into it in fun facts, but there's an interesting casting choice that they did make and then they unmade that didn't make it to screen. So we'll talk about that in a little bit as well.
So here's my thinking, I think, on the political points. I think there's a moment that's happened a couple times, more than a couple times, I think, in these stories, where I start to hear Russell's voice in the script. And I can hear him typing at the keyboard, and I can almost like hear the point he's making. And it doesn't feel like it's kind of in there in a way that elevates the story as much as he almost has a point he wants to make. And it sometimes feels a little wedged in, even though it's often a point I agree with. Mm. You know, and
that's a really good way of putting it.
I think it's in this case, I agree with this point. And the point is that we have political groups who advocate for the rights of unborn children, but equally undermine kind of programs, school funding, social services that would support those children, struggling parents once they're born. And that's a good point to make. But I feel the point is made so overtly that it's kind of like, okay, yes, message received. And I think that's sometimes it, is that it, and it doesn't almost take it far enough to tell a story around that point convincingly.
Mm.
Like, why was the program suddenly shut down? What happened when these people on the station kind of went back and appealed? And what will happen to these babies once they reach the new planet? And, you know, it was almost like it went to a point and then it stopped. Why did that one person stay behind when everyone else left the ship?
I feel you completely. And I think it definitely has happened more than a few times in this era. And it's a difficult thing to kind of have a commentary on, especially coming from a queer podcast where we are big advocates of platforming people's voices. And I think that the points they're making are important points to be made on TV, especially to new audiences that might be coming to the show. But that was a really good point you made about how it feels like you can hear Russell's voice rather than the character. It almost, for me, when I was watching it, it really like took me out the way they chose to write about it. It happened twice in this episode. It happened once with the dialogue where they're saying they forced us to have the babies, but once the baby's born, they won't look after it. But then when they explained what a refugee was, and they were like, well, that's the thing about being a refugee. You don't get to be welcomed in. You have to turn up on. So, and I was like, okay, yeah. I'm hearing what you're saying and I understand, but it feels very, it's a difficult line to tread when you're writing the dialogue, and Russell's a far better writer than I am, obviously, but I would, I would say that it feels more like you're hearing the author than the character. It doesn't necessarily feel like the character would say that at the moment. I don't think that the nanny would be explaining to the doctor and Ruby, well, this is what a refugee is. You know what I mean? Like, it feels better.
I do understand. Place. Yes. Yeah. And I'm not, you know, I honestly couldn't say off the top of my head, how do you fix that problem? Because I think it almost requires more space for that point to breathe. And I think something about the nature of a 45-minute contained story where we turn up, we meet an issue, and we fix it, and we leave, creates an issue. So I think it's easier to tell those stories and make those points with almost like series-wide arcs. I think those are important points to make as well. I think it's important to be a writer who has something to say. But I'm just not sure about the way it was said. It didn't feel like it was woven in, perhaps, as well into the narrative as it could have been. Does that make sense? Am I making a good point?
No, you are making a good point, because also, like you were saying about season-wide arcs, I think that a tricky thing about a 45-minute episode, and it would happen with an hour episode, is that with Doctor Who, you arrive to a problem, the Doctor solves the problem, and then the Doctor leaves. And when you're bringing up issues like pro-life, pro-choice, what it is to be a refugee, these aren't points that can be solved within 45 minutes. This isn't a discussion that can be had and then have a line drawn under it. So it's a tricky thing to bring into an episode in this format. But I commend them for doing it, because like we were saying, it should be spoken about.
It's good that I think they have the license to still talk about these things.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess a low for me generally with this is that you can feel the compression of this series versus what we have with the 13 episode series one. So, for example, in The End of the World, Series 1, Episode 2, we have a scene similar to this one where Rose has a bit of an existential crisis, kind of sitting there with the Doctor, gazing at the world about to burn and realizing that she's this little speck in kind of the context of 5 billion years that have passed, that all of her family and maybe even her are buried down there on the planet in front of her, that no one lives on that planet anymore. And that's kind of a horrifying reality, and that she is so far away. She barely knows who this man is. How could she have come so far away with this guy she barely knows? Oh my God, am I even safe? What's happening? Who is this guy? And that is like a really poignant moment. And there's a few moments like that we get with Rose where she's almost like, shit, this is really scary. And though it's very charming, Ruby is kind of just sort of smiling and running along and enjoying the ride. And there's almost not a moment for her to breathe and get that almost like culture shock adjustment period where someone learns to trust the Doctor. She just trusts him from the go, from the story they've had. So I think that might be like one problem I'm feeling right now, is that the pacing is rapid, 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 where it's almost like, right, here's the past, here's the exposition, here's the future.
I have definitely noticed that and struggled with it a bit. I feel like, and this is maybe there's a controversial point to say in the pod, I don't know.
Nope.
I feel like from Russell's first series to this, there's definitely a few plot points that literally feel copy and paste, but don't feel like they're done as well, if I'm honest. So
okay.
It's a really good example, like you said, about the phone call, because we got that really emotional scene with Rose. And then when she calls her mum, the whole point is she's having a really mundane sort of normal conversation, like, oh, what day is it? Wednesday, you hung over. Blah, blah, blah. And then she hangs up and she goes, that was my mother. Like, she's dead. That was 5 billion years ago. And she kind of processes that. Whereas in this, she calls the mum, she's like, oh, you just left. Oh, hold on, mum. Got it. I'll talk later. Wow, that was mum. Cool. And
how much is that going
to
cost?
And so, like you were saying, we don't really get to see the emotional levity of that for Ruby. But more so than that, there's lots of elements in this episode that feel like they've been plucked from previous scripts. So the Shakespeare Code as well, the whole dialogue about stepping on a butterfly, that was first spoken about in Martha's first year with the Doctor. And you kind of, I guess, are getting the payoff of like, oh, we're actually going to see what does happen when you tread on a butterfly. But it feels like that's just another example of a moment. I mean, it's a clear and obvious parallel, the Doctor and Ruby on the space deck looking at a planet below them having this moment, but it is literally the exact same scene near enough as in The End of the World. And I feel like there might have been a more original way. I think there are a million ways you can have an introduction to a companion, and to have the return of Russell at the helm of the show be mirroring so exactly and so self-referential to his previous era, it does leave me a little bit like, oh, like there's probably a different way you could have done that.
I totally get that. I think I'm interested to see what comes through for the rest of the series and then look back on kind of this season as a whole as well, you know. And I'm also just very, not to be on a tangent, but very, very excited to see what Moffat brings to the table next week. And this being the first episode next week, boom, that isn't penned by Russell T Davies since The Star Beast, see how that feels different when it's a different writer coming through. And we've got, I think, at least one other story this season that's
yeah, no, we've got, well, I think that might even be three.
So it'll be interesting to see how that changes as well.
Yeah, for sure.
One other thing I wanted to mention was, can there be such a thing as a story that is too silly as a season opener? Because it's a really silly season opener. It's goofy. This goofy as hell. And I had a think, because I was thinking about series one of Doctor Who, and I was like, there was a grittiness to season one, or series one, sorry, of Doctor Who in 2005. And there was a grittiness to it. There was a certain like tragedy kind of underlying this, where kind of the Doctor was kind of like reeling from the Time War, and the way Christopher Eccleston played that Doctor as well, who was a lot less carefree, and he was quite burdened, and he was very closed and very mysterious, and that kind of carried its way through as well.
Yeah.
But there was certainly a lot of silliness, let me tell you that. I'm thinking back to series one, episode one. We had Mickey's melting head in the TARDIS. We had a CGI wheelie bin eating him and burping. The next episode we had Moisturize Me as the main villain. We had series two, evil cat nuns. Series three, rhinos on the moon. Series four, I'm waving at fat. Series five, get a girlfriend, Jeff, and so on. So
in
a way,
we had the Slovene.
Like, but for a series opener, like in a way, it's actually quite nice that in introducing itself to a new audience, Doctor Who isn't trying to be pretentious here. It's not demanding, take me seriously, I've got money now. It's still Doctor Who, and it's still absurd. And in giving, I think, new viewers a flavor, it's almost saying, this is how wacko it can get. Like, get on board with it or don't bother, because sometimes it will be space babies.
Doctor Who is just a silly show at its roots, and I would never want it to take... I think that there are so many moments that you need levity and serious tones, but I would never want the show as a whole to take itself too seriously. I'm glad that Russell is leaning into humour, because I'm bloody loving it. I'm enjoying it. I think like having...
I'm loving it.
I think as well, especially in this episode, having the bogeyman look as gruesome and horrible and actually quite scary as he does, and be the bogeyman made of bogeys, and you have that scene where they realize he's made of snot, like, and then you have quite like a sad scene where you realize, oh well, he's a baby, it's one of the babies, and the nanny's gonna eject it, not realizing, and like, it's quite a little mini emotional roller coaster. And but all the time, at the root of it, the monster is a baby made of snot, Like, and the way that the spaceship jettisons itself towards the planet is because of all the nappies have built up so much methane that yes. can't be good to just let out into the universe, Doctor, by the way. Like, that's not going to do anyone any good.
I've already seen at least one edit where letting it rip just involves the Doctor trying to do that and it just ignites the methane and everyone dies. and also, they can now reach the TARDIS, which was a direct route that was offered at the outset. But yeah. Anyway, I mean, as saying what I've just said about can it ever be too silly, the bogey gag and reveal, and like, guess what they've made the bogeyman out of? You'll never guess what they've made the bogeyman out of. No, don't say it. No. I think they acted it as best they could and they injected a lot of humor to it. I mean, this much toilet humor, I feel like almost like pick your nappy gags or your bogey monster.
That's very true.
I think
true.
It was layering them, like the solution being, I'm going to eject all these pooey farts into space and that will jettison us towards the refugee planet. I did feel a bit like, right. So I almost feel like one or the other. And like the prolonged scene then as well, I've not just them realizing that, but then like drizzling snot slowly over Millie Gibson's head.
Oh, that just felt like a slime tube. Like, that wasn't snot. That just felt like, here's the slime gun.
Yeah, that too. I was like, okay. So I think it was a bit of a slow realization. I'll be honest, when they were like, guess what it's made out of? I thought it was worse than snot. I was like, what do you mean, what's it made of? I was like, what are babies made of? And I was really having God. A minute of just like, what is it? And I was like, how far have they gone with this? But snot, okay, snot.
Yeah. I did like Shooty's acting where he was like, oh, Ruby. Oh, and she was Ruby. Like, don't say. And he's like, I don't think I can tell you. And he said something like, I have traveled across the universe. I have seen everything and I have never seen anything. With his little like hand poking out, he's like, I have never seen anything like this before. I can't even tell you, Ruby. Like, it was quite funny the way he delivered it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They delivered it as best they could.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really get many characters, like actual characters beyond the babies in this. We've got the bogeyman, we've got the Doctor and Ruby, and we've got the nanny, Jocelyn. I thought it was really interesting casting to put Golda Cheval as the nanny. I was watching it and Nick loves Bridgerton. He was like, oh, Bridgerton! And which will come up again later in the series. I think that she's great. I think she delivered her lines really, really well, but I do agree with the tweets that I think she was maybe underplayed. I think she's such a great actress. And what she was saying, like, you could really felt like she was caring for these babies and she was going to do anything she can. She had that little moment where she kind of broke down at the end once she realized what she was about to do and Ruby had to kind of console her. And then you have the baby single lap and she's like, I've been very naughty. Jocelyn's been very naughty. And I feel like it didn't really give her the room to stretch as an actor. But again, like you were saying, it's such a packed episode in what will be quite a packed series that I don't think there's much more space you could have given her within like a 45-minute slot to develop. If anything, I would have liked to have learned, like you said earlier, a bit more about the people who made the ship, why they left and why she chose to stay. But, you know, you can't have everything.
Yes. I mean, there's a number of points within this that didn't make total sense. How the kids learned to pilot the ship, why they would just evacuate without the children who'd already been born and so on, didn't make a ton of sense.
The one line that I liked because it was sad and it got like an emotional response out of me, but I did think it was a bit confusing because, like you said, they could have just taken the babies with it, I don't know, is when they ask her, well, why are you hiding here? Like, why are you talking through the interface? And she says, I don't want to see them die and I don't want them to see me die, because we're running out of air, but the last thing I will do is evacuate the air from where I am to give them air, but even that won't be enough. And I was like, like, this is what I want more of. I think if we're having the silly fun camp, we need more moments and like maybe consequences of stuff like this. Like, maybe even it, depending on how far I want to push it, I know it is a light episode, like one of the babies was premature or something and one of the babies had already died and she was like, I've seen what's going to happen and I don't want to see that again. Like, I think maybe you could push it more. I don't really know what the solution is, but I just would have liked to see more of her, I guess.
I do get that. Yeah. I mean, we could resolve so much with hour long episodes, couldn't we?
Oh, I know. If only. I want a movie every time. Only specials, please.
Some rapid points. I really enjoyed the name of the planet being Pacifico del Rio. I just felt that was really camp. It sounds like that is like a party planet, even though it sounds that they are quite corrupt people. I quite liked the Doctor's speech as well to Ruby in front of the planet and him doing this call out about kind of no job, no boss, no taxes or rent or bills to pay. And I like that they are pushing the appeal of the life of the Doctor, not necessarily being like a calling to do right through the universe. It's not even necessarily a search of adventure or danger. It's just like the sheer freedom. And I think for the modern adult, the modern home worker, the modern overworked person, that is the appeal of Doctor Who, is the escapist fantasy.
Yeah.
And I think that's really nice. That's kind of what they're going for with this. Mm. Another rapid point, Rani mention.
Love
that.
Love.
They were kind of posh. They'd use titles like the Doctor or the Bishop or the Rani. And I was like, yeah, Rani.
Oh my
mention.
God, when we watched that with some friends, the biggest like cheer of people just going like, yeah.
Cheer for the Rani. And Cherry Sunday as well at the end. I really enjoyed that. Oh, what the blinking flip. going off of
the air. Every time I see her, I'm like a tasty treat.
What the blinking flip is such a fun line. The rumor I'm hearing on Twitter is that the song that would have been played on Shuzi's jukebox was going to be the Sugar Babes Push the Button. And Russell T Davies did tease that there would be a song played in the first episode, and there wasn't a song played in this episode on the jukebox. And it would have made sense if they had played Push the Button, because of course we got this reference throughout the episode to One More Time, Push the Button. And that didn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
So it would have been nice if we could have kept that.
I wish we could have. It definitely, I noticed, because I think the first time, like, we spoke about this before, and maybe they've ADR'd in, like when he's in the lift or something, he says something, but the first time that he says, ooh, once again, push the button, before he opens up the window to have a look out on the deck, I was like, when did we push the button the first time? When was that a gag? So it would have been nice if we'd had some payoff. Because also she makes a real point of going, oh, jukebox, like that. And it kind of was like Chekhov's gun, where it's like, here's the jukebox. Wonder what's going to happen with that. And we haven't really had anything with that.
We haven't really used it very much yet. No, we had like in the next episode, the end of the Doctor Who theme comes out of it. But I doubt that's actually what they were playing on it.
I'll wait for the next episode to talk about. There's a line he said that I loved, but I'll wait. Till
oh, you've got
to
save yourself. And then I guess finally, like, the mystery girl trope is back. And I don't know how I feel about that yet, because we've talked extensively in our reviews of different eras of companions. And you can go back and listen to those episodes where we cover the history and the story and our highs and lows and our thoughts about different companions. And we've got all the way up to Clara Oswald so far. And the mystery girl trope that we see a lot with Clara, the impossible girl, is back. And I think it's being executed very well at the moment, but I am a bit like, we're here again, where almost the Doctor's intrigue around a companion is what pushes the Doctor to bring them along. It's not just that they have a chemistry and he sees something in them and he's enjoying seeing the world through their eyes. Mm. It's a bit that, but he's obviously been watching Ruby and he's been learning about her life and watching all these coincidences and this bad luck. And there's a reason he was watching her in the pub that night singing, and he's trying to kind of understand his companion, and he's scanning her on the way out the door, and there's something he's not telling her about, kind of what his real motivations are for bringing her along. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. We had, I think Chibnall's era was very much meant to, and successfully, be the era of companions just being normal people
who survive.
Normal people who survive, thrown into an adventure. And I think there is really, really great storytelling to be had there, where they're not magic. There's no big backstory. There's no lore that we're missing. They are just people who met the Doctor and got picked up for adventures. And I think that's something I maybe didn't appreciate that much at the time. But I feel like companions being a mystery girl really came about with Amy Pond. You know, maybe we had a bit with Donna, but Clara was really the one who was like, you know, the impossible girl, Clara. Who's Clara? Yeah. And I feel like it is very of the era, very kind of 2014-15, that storyline. So I'm interested to see how they play it and how they make it different from when we've had it with previous companions.
Mm. Yes, we'll see. Because at the moment, it feels like a bit of a copy-paste Moff story, dare I say. And we also got quite a Moffity twist at the end there.
There's always a twist at the end.
And that's, of course, that the monster isn't really a monster. And the story's a story.
Oh, yeah.
And that's very Moffat.
It's very Moffat. It's very tied up with the bow. There's a little bit I didn't like. I hated the bogeyman howling like a wolf. Like a real, like, ow! ooh, I didn't like that. The story,
I thought it was quite sweet when the babies joined in, though.
Yeah, the babies join in, but he's kind of still just locked in the airlock, just waiting to see what happens.
Yes.
At the end. They're like, look, it's the nanny and the babies, and we've still got a monster locked away.
You know, you know, the Doctor and Ruby are going to leave, and Jocelyn's going to get back in the control room and eject it anyway.
Probably. I could see that. But yeah, no, overall, I thought it was a lot of fun. I think that one thing I've realized with watching New Doctor and then doing a podcast about it is that I tend to look at it from an analytical view, and I tend to lean towards being a bit critical because I'm like trying to process, like, what do I really think and the story in this. And it's not until I watch it with other Doctor Who fans or casual viewers when they're like cackling with laughing and they think it's so silly in this. And I'm like, no, you know what? Mm. It is funny and it is silly and it is great. I've really, really had a fun time with this. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing the rest of the season play out.
There is absolutely a point in here which is just that, and Josh Snares has actually made a video on this week, which I need to sit down and watch, which is about almost releasing some of the shame and some of the cringe when you're a fan of these things.
I contributed to their Google form for the video.
Oh, well done. And that's, I think that's very much true. Would you agree that there's a point where I've said to you, and other fans of Doctor Who have said to us this week, which is almost that sometimes when you want a show to succeed and you want it to be popular, you find yourself watching moments that you think, and you think, I worry that other people won't like that. I worry that new viewers won't like that. I worry that my friends won't understand that. You know, I worry that casual people won't get that. Oh, I've got to watch this with my parents. That's going to be embarrassing. And you know, it's not really about then. Are you having fun?
Yeah.
Are you having fun?
And the answer is yes.
Don't
I'm
worry
having lots
about
of fun.
It. Are you having fun? And you know what? That's it. I was having fun.
If you like having fun, we're in for a bit more now. Just you and me. Play a quick game.
Of?
A game of camp or damp. Camp or damp. Now, for anyone who may not have experienced one of our fun games of camp or damp, we like to look back on the episode we've just reviewed and go through a couple of the top moments and say whether they're camp or whether they're damp. Alistair, are you ready to play?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Pacifico del Rio, camp or damp.
Is that how he delivers it in the episode?
Yeah, I think so. He's a real, like, rolling the R.
Del Rio. I love it. I think it's really camp. I think it sounds lovely. There's a brand, a beauty brand at the moment that's really popular, and it sounds like that. But it's not called that. What is it? It's like a bit same thing. It's called like something Del Rio, and it's, oh, I love it. Anything Del Rio.
Ooh. Del Rio. Camp. The Doctor and Ruby being daddy and mummy. Camp and damp.
So camp. So camp. Like, I feel like Ruby is mummy for the lesbians. Shooty is daddy for the gays. Daddy and mummy.
Their parents to us all. And finally, the bogeyman being made out of actual bogeys, snot and boogers. Camp or damp?
I think damp. I'm sorry. Mm-mm. It's a family show. We need some kids to enjoy it. We need today's 8 and 9 year olds to do what you and I did in 2005 and see something in this.
We loved the Slitheen.
We love the Slitheen. We love the fart jokes. You know, what's the modern fart joke? It's a bogey joke.
There you go. It's one for the kids.
That's what's in.
Fair enough.
It's one for the kids. I can't be super mad about it. You know, it's what it is.
Now, I do have a few fun facts for you about this episode. And these were actually sourced by friend of the pod, Josh. So thank you for those, Josh.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
As mentioned earlier, Lenny Rush was originally cast to play the voice of Eric. However, at the read-through, it was decided by Russell T. Davies that it was actually too good for a non-visual role because it would have only been voicing the babies. So a new character was created, Morris, the new scientific advisor for UNIT, and he is going to be seen later in the season.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm glad I think that they didn't
waste him, I think.
Yes. I'm glad they didn't waste him because he's a really good comic actor, and I forget that in the show I've seen him in, which is so annoying. It's almost like it was called, like, Am I Being Dramatic or Am I Going Mad or something like that. I've got the name of it wrong. It's excellent if you get the chance to see it. He's in that as the son, and he is he's got like a surprising like maturity he brings to a role. I'm really glad he wasn't just used on like a voice character for this as well. Also, I think the babies suited younger voices.
Yes, so, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Golda Rocheveld Jocelyn had previously played another character in the Hooniverse. She played Dr. Angela Connolly in the series finale of series 2 of Torchwood.
I actually had a sneak peek just now as you were about to read this and Googled, and I was surprised. I was absolutely shocked.
Yeah.
There she is. And it almost looks like a pretty minor role for her.
I think it is. But also, I think given the time that it came out, I don't think that she was as well of an established actor as she is now. So interesting to see. Interesting to see. The Doctor mentions the possibility of visiting Star Trek, but in comics, the 4th Doctor and the 11th Doctor met the Star Trek characters when an N-Space merged with the Federation universe in the comic Assimilation.
I love it. I like the crossovers and the references. There was a... we'll get into theories next week.
Yeah.
There's a theory about kind of the mention of certain franchises and how Ruby could be manifesting certain things to happen. And that later in this episode, after she mentioned Star Trek, when you see the officers kind of signing off and abandoning the space station, they're wearing costumes that look a little bit Star Trek. So anyway, we'll get into that when we get into theories, which I think we'll be doing more in the next episode, which, as we say, should be out either now or in the next 5 minutes.
Let's go listen. Well, I've got one final fun fact for you before you jump over and listen to Devil's Chord, which is that not only is this the first double-billed episode airing back-to-back in the show's history, it's the first non-special episode since December 2021 and the first episode in a full series since March 2020. That's mad. That's over 4 years since we had an original full run series.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while, girls, but we've made it.
We've made it. We're back.
We're out the woods. Series two, I think it hasn't finished filming.
No, it's yet, finished. It's finished filming.
Oh, okay.
It's wrapped.
Right. Well, they've wrapped. And so that's all happening. So, I mean, it's all coming thick and fast now. They're in their swing. They're in their element.
They're in their element. Well, thank you so much to listen for listening to us talk about Space Babies. As always, we're available on all of our socials. Please reach out to us and let us know what you thought of the episode. We are on X, the app formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all of which are at HulaLaPod. And you can also go onto our YouTube channel, also at HulaLaPod, where you can rewatch old episodes of the podcast.
And if you'd like to support the podcast as well, which we really appreciate, you can rate us 5 stars. You can follow the podcast. You get notified when new episodes come up. You can find our coffee, ko-fi, and search Hulala on there, or I think it's coffee/Hulala, and find our account, and you can donate to the pod. You can share us with a friend or on your story so that someone else who likes Doctor Who can listen to the pod and get involved. And of course, we say get in touch with us on all the socials as well, because really, we really like hearing from you. We especially enjoy screen recordings, funny behind-the-scenes facts, stupid memes, moments you enjoyed from the episode, quote retweets. All of that is super wonderful and appreciated.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you for listening to Space Babies, and we will see you right now as we talk about the Devil's Chord.
Yes! We'll see you right now. Jump over now.
Bye.
See you in a minute.